It all started with a hand of green bananas, but Krista Watkins from the small community of Walkerman in Queensland is blazing a trail to cut down on food waste in Australian agriculture. This week at Federal Parliament's Great Hall, she was awarded the top gong at the Rural Women's Award. The award includes financial assistance, but it also opens recipients up to a network of successful regional women who provide support as mentors and advisors. Krista Watkins spoke to the ABC's National Regional Affairs reporter Anna Henderson just after she was named as the winner.
This all started, I understand, with some green bananas. Take me through what's led you from that point to here. What was that initial incident, accident, whatever you'd like to call it, that led you to have this idea?
Yeah, so it was the green bananas and just watching the animals wanting to feast wildly off green bananas only. They weren't interested in ripe ones and, you know, made the discovery that inside a green banana, if you dry it, it is like a flower. And just in our local community, the excess sweet potatoes, it's always been a problem and certainly earned a reputation for ourselves as being game changers and creating an alternative industry in bananas. And it really was time to look a bit further afield and try and help out our neighbours, you know, 20, 30 kilometres down the road who had all this excess sweet potatoes. What could we do for them? And, you know, you've got to start somewhere. So it was time to start by helping out our community.
And at the heart of this is your concern about food waste. How extensive is it in Australia and why is it happening?
Yeah, what a lot of people don't understand is that every farm has waste. So the general number is about 20%. But depending on, you know, Mother Nature, if you are served up a cyclone or on the market supply for that week, you can have as much as 80% of your crop wasted. And it's really disheartening for farmers, especially when they've put a lot of time, money, energy and love into producing this beautiful nutrient-dense food. And they just have to disc it back into their fields because there's simply no market for it. So food that would ordinarily go to waste, you know, in anywhere from 2 to 3 months, we can give it a natural shelf life of 3 years, creating food stability, but also creating alternative products that consumers want.
And what do you want to see happen in 12 months' time when you've gone through this process? Where do you want your project to be up to?
Yeah, look, I really hope that in 12 months' time, sweet potato waste has been given a really, really significant nudge and that we've created some really great export opportunities for our sweet potato growers. But I hope that the message is also getting out there to other farmers in other industries, whether it is apples or berries. You know, it's time for change and we can create great change together.
As women living in regional parts of Australia, do you experience or do you think it is more challenging for you to get your ideas across the line and to be heard?
Yeah, absolutely. When I married a farmer some 9 years ago now, I think my friends thought I was mad going to live in Walkerman. But look, I've created a really great life for myself, a really great business that is going all over the world. And I certainly want my young daughters to grow up and have that same vision that just because you live in one of the tiniest towns in Australia, there's no limitations. You can do whatever you want and you can really have a great life in rural Australia.
Well, the unemployment rate in the West Australian town of Halls Creek is more than 3 times the national average, according to the most recent census. That's a statistic Jaru woman, Darylyn Gordon, is trying to change with her vision to run skills training workshops to help people get jobs in local industries. She was named the runner-up in the Rural Women's Awards, and she's speaking here with Anna Henderson.
Darylyn, what is the problem that you wanted to try and solve here?
Unemployment in my shire, so Halls Creek is where I come from, and our biggest problem, you know, everyone can relate to within our shire region is unemployment and how the impact it's and what impact it's having on Aboriginal people living in the area, from the area, and where do we see ourselves taking ownership of this problem and what change we need to implement.
What do you hope to achieve over the next year?
If it's one thing I hope to achieve, I know that success, you know, having participants come through the training program, I'd love to see, you know, 1 in 8 of the participants within every 3 months are seeing full-time jobs or training into an employment where they're not only going to give up on themselves, but they have hope to actually succeed in employment and be able to influence and inspire others in my area.
And what drives you? There are a lot of people out there trying different things in regional Australia, but what drives you to do this, and what drove you to actually put in an application?
I guess I've tried I've tried other ways in looking at how can we get our voice recognised as Aboriginal women. And for far too often, Aboriginal women have always been put down for the, you know, just in the where, in the area that we're from. And applying for this application meant that I said to myself, well, you know what, this is definitely what change is all about. I've got to take that risk, and I'm never going to know if I don't give it a go. And applying for it meant that I was, you know, I was up for something big, and having participated and won the 2018 WA Rural Women's Award, I guess I said to myself, you know, I think this was meant to be. It's definitely for a reason, and it's definitely opened doors. And like I said, the network is just greater than having to keep whinging about unemployment in Halls Creek.
Do you think there are extra barriers for women to achieve and to be heard in regional Australia?
I'd say yes and no. Yes, I felt like that one time ago. But looking at the amount of women in this room tonight and the great leadership, potential, opportunity, you know, the stuff that we're getting successful in, I'd say no, because it's definitely not a barrier for me now back in Halls Creek, because now I can say I've been there, done that. And I wouldn't go back to Halls Creek and say I can't do that, because I know I can. And that's definitely something I really want to influence other Aboriginal women in my area. That success is, there's no limitation to success. Just because you live rural, remote, or really in an isolated town with a population of 100 people, success is definitely not a barrier. And let's go out there, grab opportunity, bring it back and implement it in what we know we need to happen.
And it is the night of nights in Canberra for rural women. Terrific to hear about some of those stories that have got their clever, clever women initiators some recognition. Now, researchers are warning Australian agriculture will struggle to achieve its goal of becoming a $100 billion industry unless it rethinks its approach to sustainability. The Australian National University this week launched its Sustainable Farms program, which brings together environmental, economic, and psychological experts. The aim is to get farmers to think beyond the productivity and profitability of their land in a move that they say will lead to better results all round. Our Canberra reporter Brett Worthington is speaking here with the program's lead professor, David Lindenmayer.
What sustainability means to me in a farming environment is that you are profitable, you're productive, you're in a good mental health space, but you're also nurturing other key things such as biodiversity. So to me, sustainable farming now means actually not just sustaining things, it actually means improving the natural assets on your land. It means improving the shelter belts, improving the farm dams, improving the water courses, improving the paddock productivity, improving the areas of native vegetation. These are what we call the portfolio of natural assets that we actually have to nurture and improve in these really challenging farming times.
So how does that compare to what you think many farmers out there would think when they think of that term sustainability?
Often I don't think what's happening is that people recognise all the different kinds of natural assets on their farms, and they don't recognise often relatively small changes can make a huge positive difference. And in other cases, they don't recognise that nurturing some of these natural assets can actually make a huge positive difference to their bottom line financially, but also a huge positive difference to their mental health state as well. And farm dams are a really, really good example. So your typical picture of a farm dam at the moment is a dried up area that's cracking clay, basically with no water in it. Contrast that to farms where we've seen that farmers have actually made significant changes to how they manage the water on their property. Their dams are much deeper. They have a hardened access, so their livestock have access only through that pathway. The rest of the farm dam is fenced. There are trees to provide shade for the water. The water's of higher quality. It's cooler, so the livestock can drink it. Many people don't realise that once the water goes over 30 degrees Celsius, many of the southern breeds of livestock actually can't drink the water, and then they can't eat the food. So this project is about the intersection of financial health, mental health, and ecological health.
We'll get more to the land side of it in just a second, but that mental health aspect of it, making that a very important pillar of farm sustainability, how common do you think that general mindset is throughout the country?
I don't think many people really yet understand that good farm management and good environmental management on farms actually plays a really significant role in mental health, improved mental health state. And we've seen anecdotal evidence of that through many of our long-term studies. But the exciting thing with this new project is to actually start to quantify that and not only understand the relationships between better asset management, natural asset management on farms and farmer mental health, but also to understand what kinds of resources are needed to be able to put a floor under that, to be able to help people to make good decisions and keep mental health as a really important part of their farming lives.
The Australian agriculture industry talks a lot about wanting to become a $100 billion industry. But if the industry just continues to sustain what is there currently, what impact does that have on possibilities of obtaining, of growing the industry?
Well, I think it compromises the ability to grow the industry. We've seen that some industries now, such as Meat and Livestock Australia, so livestock industry, are really concerned about carbon emissions. And so they should be. You know, it's one of the biggest emitters of carbon in the country, and in fact, globally. And so how do you make a farm truly carbon neutral? Where do you do the strategic planting of vegetation? Where do you keep the patches of remnant vegetation? How do you make those investments so that you can get multiple co-benefits? So you can get the carbon storage, you can get the biodiversity benefits, you can get the livestock shelter benefits. And so there's some really exciting and important work that needs to be done there about how we design these landscapes and how we design these farm areas so that we can meet these needs. We can't just do what we've done for the last 50 to 100 years. This is a new era. This is where we really have to be smart about how we do the farming, and we have to make decisive decisions at the farm level and at the landscape level.
There's a lot of talk always about climate change and farmers' thoughts on it. What do you think is the difference between the rhetoric and the reality on a lot of farms across the country?
Well, the reality is that many, many farmers understand that the climate is changing and things are far, far more challenging than they've been. My wife's family are farmers in Victoria, and they grow grapes, as well as other things. They're also livestock owners. And they've had to change the variety of grapes to deal with changes in temperature and rainfall. And we've seen that kind of thing play out over and over again all over the country. And so there needs to be deep thinking about how you deal with very difficult times, like the droughts that we've been experiencing. And a good example is the previous millennium drought in the noughties. What we saw was that farmers made strategic decisions to change the way they were doing their farming. And as a result of those changes, many of those farmers are now much better positioned during the current drought to deal with the very challenging conditions than they otherwise would have been. And so that's what we need to do, to have that outreach to encourage people to rethink the way they're doing things so that they can deal with these challenges that are coming at them.
Are you optimistic that lessons that will be learned from the millennium drought, from this current drought, will better shape farmers for the next drought, which will inevitably come?
I am optimistic. I have to be. You know, I love this country and I love what happens on the land. I also love the country's biodiversity and the environmental assets that come with it, the environmental infrastructure that I call it. And we know that we won't change everyone, but if we can change a proportion of the farming fraternity out there this time around and then the next time around and again, we'll go on that pathway towards not only sustainability but actually rejuvenating the assets that we need to, the natural assets that we have to have on farm properties to make them truly sustainable. Not only sustainable financially and ecologically, but sustainable socially so that we have mental well-being across these farming landscapes.
So this is work that the ANU is leading with, but both at a state and federal level, you've seen governments from both sides of the aisle make cuts to resource management agencies, to the CSIRO, to Landcare funding. How important is it that funding is reversed and you are seeing further investment in this area to work with farmers?
I think the funding side of it for investing in natural assets is critical. If we don't do that, then our dreams of truly sustainable farming will be just dreams and won't become a reality. We need to make these investments. If we're going to grow agriculture as a really important part of the nation's economy, then we have to grow the natural assets on those farms to make farming not only sustainable but improved over time. I think one of the really big issues in this space is organisations like natural resource management bodies, like catchment management authorities, local land services, land care. You know, those groups are really important parts of the social fabric of agricultural Australia, and they're very important outreach to be able to connect with many farmers, to be able to guide this process of adopting sustainable farm practices and to start building the natural assets. And so we have to invest in those in those groups and invest heavily, because that really is part of resilience and creating robust farming communities across the country. And we've seen through successive governments major cuts in that area, and we have to reverse those to get back to what's sensible levels of investment in this really important space.
ANU Professor David Lindenmayer speaking there with Brett Worthington.